We have audio.
You're able to hear us
now? I can finally hear somebody. Good morning.
Good morning. I wasn't sure because it was so silent.
It was very, very silent and took a few minutes to kind of get us all together electronically.
Yeah, everybody just staring into the abyss of virtual meetings. Nice to see everyone this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Who do we have? Oh, we have our actuarial fellow.
Yeah, I'm Glenn Gahan with Silverstone Group.
Please. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning. Hi.
Let me see who else we have on board here. My name is Braulio Escobar, and I'm a member of the Retirement Board of Trustees. So my computer shows we have the host, we have Glenn, we have Dave Heater, who I just spoke with, we have Steve, we have Mike, we have John Baker, and we have Andrew Haggerty. Let me go back to our friend Kay. Kay, do you anticipate anybody else participating?
I thought that Mark Salins would be in.
Okay, I show 10:03. Let's wait until 10:05 or 10:06, and then we can kind of commence.
Okay, hang on.
Mr. Haggerty, you're on mute. Mr. Baker, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Here, let's do that. Now you don't have to press it.
Oh, perfect. So yes, I can.
So that great. Okay. And Mike, can you hear me?
Mike stepped out.
No, Mike had to
okay.
make sure. Mike helped John. Got John going. So, yeah, I can hear you, Braulio. You hear me? Can you?
Yes, I can hear you. A little sketchy, but I can hear you.
All righty. Well, we may have Spencer may join in, so he'll just be listening in on the presentation if he shows up. He's up to his eyeballs.
Okay. Well, let's give us another minute or so, and then we'll call the meeting to order, and proceed with the report from Silverstone. I think I have a new version of Zoom because I can't see everybody. It's all
they keep changing
just individual.
Oh, there's Spencer.
I'm trying to on
Zoom. Oh.
But someone's got to let me in, I think.
So. You want to sit here or you want to do it in your office?
I was going to do it in my office. So.
Okay. Okay.
No, I'm there. I'm in the waiting room in Zoom.
Oh, okay. Got to let him in. I warned her.
Hi, John.
Hello.
I've got a blank screen that says Conference Bridge, and I don't have people's little faces like I typically would. So Mr. Noble has joined us. Mr. Haggerty is on mute. Mr. Baker, Mike, the Conference Bridge, Steve. Mr. Heater's on mute. Glenn is here, the host, and then me. One more minute, and we'll call us to order.
Dietmar just joined, too.
Okay, I see that. Kay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so in another second or two, we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. And if you would do us a favor and give us a roll call.
Are we ready to go?
Okay, it's 10:06.
Okay.
Today's date is November 23, 2021. It's 10:06. This is the time scheduled for a meeting of the City of Newport Retirement Board of Trustees with a special meeting call to discuss the Silverstone Actuarial Report. Kay, could you be so kind as to give us a roll call?
Yes. Braulio Escobar?
Here.
Steve Stewart?
Here.
Mike Brzezinski?
Here.
Andrew Haggerty.
Here.
John Baker.
Here.
Dietmar Goebel.
Here.
Spencer Nabel.
Here.
David Heater.
Here.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. The purpose of our meeting today was to discuss and receive the Silverstone report. And I believe we have Mr. Glenn Gollenhair. And Mr. Gollen, could you go ahead and give us your report?
I'd be pleased to do that. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking the time to let me present the actuary's report. And would it be helpful if I did a screen share that had the report up as I present it? Would that be good?
Braulio, what do you think? It might be a good idea.
I think it's a good idea. I know when we have our other meetings and Mr. Haggerty has his reports, it's great to have them on the large screen.
Okay. I just hit the share screen and I get a pop-up that says host disabled participant screen sharing. So I may need the host to enable.
Okay.
I'm still not able to activate that function. There we go. Are you able to see my report on the screen now?
Yes. Okay.
Great. Well, thank you. Annually we prepare a funding actual evaluation report as of July 1st. So today we'll go through the July 1st, 2021 report, and in it we present primarily the funding recommendation for the plan. We also give some statistics as far as the funded percentage of the plan, some data regarding the investment performance, the changes in the plan participants. And I'll start with our page one, where we call the financial highlights. It gives a nice overview or summary of the evaluation results. And as a reminder, each year, going back to when we started working with the city back in 2016, we present three alternative calculations of the contribution, and they differ by the amortization of the unfunded liability. And we'll see some detail on this in a few pages, but there's two main components of the contribution calculation, is what we call the normal cost, which is the value of benefits earned during the year, plus an amortization of the unfunded liability. And for a plan that has assets equal to the actual accrued liability, then there would be just the normal cost to continue to pay for. Your plan is getting close to being fully funded, meaning the assets equal to the accrued liability, but there's still an unfunded amount that gets amortized. So back in 2016, we first started this method of calculation where we amortize the unfunded liability over a closed period, beginning with either 25-year, 20, or 10-year amortization period. And those periods are being reduced by 1 year as each year we go along. So for 2021, we're actually amortizing the unfunded liability over either a 20, 15, or 10-year time period. And you can see the impact of shortening the amortization period, either ranging from $160,000 to $310,000. And historically, the city's contributed around $400,000 to the plan, so oftentimes exceeding by at least a little bit the calculation, even on a 10-year amortization basis. We show some of the annual compensation for active participants under age 62. Age 62 is the plan's normal retirement age. And so when we talk about costs and normal costs, those generally get applied to those who are not yet at age 62, and the number of participants under age 62 is now decreased from 15 participants last year to just 10 participants July 1, 2021. And if we look at the percentage of that contribution as a compared to the covered compensation, it's hovered around 20%, and that's been fairly consistent. So as the number of participants decrease, the covered compensation decreases, but here we see there's a pretty nice decrease in the amount of the contribution from last year to this year. And primarily that was driven by the strong investment performance mm-hmm. through the year. Mm-hmm. The market value returned about 20% for the period ending June 30, 2021. The plan actually uses an actuarial value of assets. When we look at the unfunded liability and the amount to amortize, we compare the actuarial value of assets to the accrued liability. And the actuarial value smooths in these gains and losses over a five-year period. And this is a very common methodology for actuarial valuations. And it just does a nice job of smoothing out the impact of investment gains or losses from year to year. But over the long term, the actuarial value of assets is going to be fairly similar to the market value of assets when you average them out. The actual accrued liability, this would be kind of what we would term the liability reserve that you'd want to have assets equal to, ideally. And we see that the ratio of the market value of assets to the accrued liability is 97%, a very significant increase from 84% last year. And I just was curious and looked back to the first year we started working with you in 2016, that was at 74%. And along the way, we've strengthened some of the assumptions, particularly the mortality table and the methodology used to calculate the accrued liability in the contribution. So it feels very, very good about having a 97% funded percentage. And of course, that's a credit to the city making the amount of contributions that you have annually. And of course, the investment return really helped out this past year. The actual present value of accrued benefits, these are a little different calculation of liability where we don't have any component for future benefit increases or future salary increases. It's just if you were to kind of stop the plan today based on these actual assumptions, what would be the present value of earned benefits? And it's just that you're right at 10.1 million. The difference between the 10.1 million here and the extra accrued liability of 10.3 million really takes into account the a component for future pay increases for the active participants under normal retirement age. As we see on the participant counts, most of your participants are either retired, meaning they're already earning monthly benefits, or the terminated vested participants that have a vested benefit is deferred to normal retirement age, so they're not currently receiving benefits, but they're due a benefit in the future. 17 active participants in the plan. Of these 17, only 10 of them are below age 62 or normal retirement age. And that's a reason why this annual normal cost decreased so much from last year to this year, because normal cost is only generated for those participants under normal retirement age. And there were 15 of them last year and only 10 of them this year. But as a percentage of pay, it's fairly consistent from year to year for the normal cost. At the bottom, we have a footnote just to indicate how this closed amortization period works, where even though we started, as I mentioned earlier, 25, 20, and 10 initially, we're now down to 20, 15, and 5 years. I won't go through all the detail to every page. This page just highlights what we call the actuarial determined contribution, and we've selected historically the 25-year amortization period for this presentation, and looking at that as a percentage of covered compensation, you're right just over 20%. And historically, the last two plan years, you've contributed the same amount, $404,045. And I was looking back historically, and on the page here. It's been hovering, around $400,000 for several years. A little bit more, some years a little bit less, other years. And that has consistently exceeded the actuarially determined contribution. So you've been fairly aggressive to fund the plan. And, you know, that's indicative, again, of the strong funded percentage that we're seeing this year. On the highlights page, we kind of mentioned the ratio of the market value to the present value of earned benefits or present value of accrued benefits. And again, significant increase from 87% last year to 99% this year. And the active participants, because it's a closed group, you'd expect the average age to increase about 1 year each year. So we're at 58.5. We're at 57.7 last year. And the reported compensation, again, for those under age 65, decreased significantly because the number of those participants decreased 15 to 10. But the average pay was about 2.9% for this group. And that was right in line with the actuarial assumption of 3% of pay increases. The investment return, we report based on the actuarial value and compare that to the actuarial assumed rate. So the actuarial value returned about 9% compared to the 6.75% assumed return. Even though the market value returned about 20%, the excess return on the market value will be deferred for over the next 4 years. So we have some built-in gains or margin that might help offset if there happened to be a downturn in the markets in the next year or so. As a matter of fact, the market value of assets, exceeded the actuarial value by a fair amount this year. The actuarial value of assets is just 93% of the market value. But the year before, the actuarial value was 102% of the market value. So in 2020, we had some built-in losses, if you will, that were going to come through the future years. And now with that strong investment performance and gain, we have some built-in gains that will come through in future years.
Glenn?
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit about how the smoothing occurs on that? Is it an even amount that's put forward over 5 years or?
Yeah, good question. And I'll get to the page right now that will kind of lay that out.
If you're coming up to it, you can.
Let's look at it right here. Each year, we calculate an expected return on the market value. Which leads to the expected market value, and we compare that to the actual market value, and the difference generates a gain or a loss, and that does get amortized on a straight line 5-year amortization period. So we just take in 20% of that gain loss each year, and we make that adjustment to the actual market value, and then to make sure that the actuarial value does not drift too far away from the market value, there's a corridor place that the actuarial value can never be less than 80% nor more than 120% of the market value. And that's just done, again, to make sure while we don't mark to market, we don't want to stray too far away from market. And that's a fairly common actuarial method to employ. So of that, this most recent year, we had a gain of over $1 million on the market value. And of that total, $852,000 of it is deferred to future years. And we'll take in 20% of that over the next 4 years.
Okay. When I saw the difference in actuarial valuation, I was not sure whether smoothing was taking place or not, but that's even with the smoothing in place.
Right. Okay. Actuarial assumptions, there wasn't any change other than every year the Society of Actuaries comes out with an update to a mortality improvement scale. And so just to keep current, we do adopt the most recent mortality improvement scale. For the last, I'd say 6 years, 5 years, this this improvement scale, while it continues to project increase in longevity, the rate of increase has dropped a little bit each year. So even though we adopt the most current improvement scale, it results in a slight decrease to the liabilities. Just very recently, they came out with the MP 2021 scale, and we're told in the description, the summary of it, it's reversed this year, where it's going to result in a slight increase in liabilities as compared to the MP 2020, but it's not a material amount. And when we talk about this, oftentimes we get the question about, well, what about the impact of COVID, and why wouldn't that result in maybe more of a decrease in the assumed improvement? And it may well, there's just a lag in the time that the Society of Actuaries collects the data and is able to put that into these mortality tables. So this does not yet reflect the experience that we've heard or seen on because of COVID. No changes in plan provisions or actuarial methods. Here we look at the graphically the determination of the actuarial determined contribution based on the 25-year amortization period. Again, that was started in the year 2016. And, it's bounced around, a little bit, but generally the trend has been a decrease in this contribution, and that's even with a 1 year reduction in an amortization period each year. So, we started out amortizing the unfunded liability over 25 years in 2016, it was down to 24 years the next year, and now we're down to 20 years. So, I think that's indicative of the improved funded status of the plan, making more contributions than this. In these determined amounts and some investment gains to help along the way. We mentioned that contribution as a percentage of pay, it's been around 20% the last couple of years, was more in 2019, but less in 2018. That's a function of how many participants are in the plan under the normal retirement age and the overall experience of the plan. Maybe has limited meaning because it's now really based on only 10 participants under normal retirement age. So that's why it's a relatively high amount of a percentage. This graph shows the unfunded liability. So this is the amount that gets amortized over the applicable amortization periods. So for 2020, we had 1.4 million, and now we're just over a million. And in 2020, we're amortizing it over 21-year period, and now we're amortizing the unfunded liability over a 20-year period. And as we saw, we have some built-in gains on the actual value of assets will continue to come through over the next 4 years. And so pending any investment losses in the next few years, we probably expect this unfunded liability to continue to decrease. Just as a reminder, on that first page, we were looking at the ratio of the market value of assets to the accrued liability, and that was at 97%. If we were to measure this unfunded liability based on the market value rather than the actuarial value, there'd be only about $320,000. Of an unfunded liability. So that kind of gives us an idea of where this number is going. Those investment gains continue to get smoothed into the actual value of assets. Then we always like to monitor the return on assets. We're using a 6.75% actuarial assumption. And of course that's forward looking, but it's always helpful to see where we've been. And to just kind of keep an eye on this, because this is of all the actuarial assumptions, the assumed investment return has the most impact on the actuarial results. And if we looked at just these, you know, 8 years, you know, one thing we like to see is for the actuarial method, how good of a job is it doing smoothing out gains and losses? And over this 8 year period, 4 of the years, the actuarial value of asset return exceeded the assumed 6.75. In the other 4 years, it was less than. So that was a good indication. And then average over the 8 years, the return has been about 7.2%. So it's exceeded the assumed return. And that's also, you know, kind of comforting, I guess, knowing that it looks to be, has been in line with past performance. And I looked at the last 7 years on the market value, and the average return is about 7.3%. You know, as long as the, you know, there's no significant changes in asset allocation or your advisor's, you know, underlying capital market assumptions, it seems to be a reasonable assumption at this point in time going forward. This page displays the actual contribution calculations based on these differing amortization periods. And for our headers, we just have the amortization period as it started out in 2016. So we'd actually have to subtract 5 for each of these. But the 2 components are the normal cost, and that's the same under all 3 of the calculations. That's the value benefits expected to be earned during the plan year. And then the a level dollar amortization of the unfunded liability. So we had the, I think on the next page we show it, but we had a, you know, just over $1 million of unfunded liability that we were amortizing either over 20 years, 15 years, or 5 years. And then because that's a beginning of the year calculation, the method just adds interest to get to the end of the year to give us a final calculated contribution. So a range of $160,000 to $310,000. So those are the calculated contributions. And of course, you make your own decisions on, you're given that as you know, some guidance of what you think the, you know, the most prudent funding amount would be. You know, we are certainly comfortable anywhere within that range. If you continue to contribute more than that, you know, that's always a plus, because that just goes to, again, strengthen the plan's funded position. This page just kind of summarizes the plan assets, presented market value, actual value, and actual accrued liability, and then the unfunded liability, $1 million, and then the amortization. It's really kind of repeated the information we saw on the previous page. Here we reconcile the market value of assets from last year to this year, and you'll see, you know, the employer contributions of $404,000. The biggest number here is the you know, unrealized gains of $1.5 million. And the benefit payments of $579,000. We'll see this on the upcoming page too, but you know, your plan is certainly a maturing plan. And one of the characteristics of that is typically your benefit payments will exceed your contribution. So you'll have negative cash flows. But the investment performance is there to you know, make up for that. And of course, every year we do our calculation of the contribution to help ensure that there's always going to be, you know, more than sufficient assets in the plan to meet the benefit obligations as they come due. We took a look at this page earlier, but it says, you know, the detailed calculation of the actuarial value of assets, where we document the gain or loss on an annual basis and how that gets amortized into the actual value of assets. As I mentioned, the actual value is only 93% of the market value, again, resulting in unrecognized gains that will come through in the future. next couple of pages are kind of accounting requirements where we look at the present value of accrued benefits compared to the market value of assets. And the nice increase is from 87% funded to 99% funded. And then we reconcile the changes in the liabilities. This $44,000 change in assumption, that's that mortality improvement scale that I mentioned, which resulted in a slight decrease in the liabilities, benefit payments. But again, just kind of an accounting derivation. Then we've got a couple pages, or a page, I believe, of risk disclosures. One of the actuarial standards of practice indicates that actuaries should try to give some indication of impact of risks involved in the plan that could impact future years' funded percentages or future years' contributions. And sample sources of risk include investment return, which is usually the biggest one, asset liability mismatch. This really refers to how changes of interest rates might impact the liabilities different from the assets. And I think your plan is not quite, but generally 60% equity, 40% fixed income. And so when you have changes in the interest rates, that's going to impact the fixed income portion of the portfolio, which is roughly 40%, but it's going to impact 100% of the liabilities. And that's really comes to be more important if you're looking to close down the plan and you had to purchase annuities for your retirees, because when you go to an insurance company, they're going to use current market rates to price the annuities. And because we're doing our valuation on an ongoing basis, we're assuming a 6.7% discount rate for the liabilities. If we had to use a real market value of the liabilities, we'd turn to the insurance companies and use that as a proxy. And we do track those rates, and they're in the neighborhood of 2% or so. So we know that if you were actually wanting to terminate and purchase annuities, that your liability would be significantly higher than the liabilities we calculate based on the actuarial assumed investment return of 6.75%. So if you ever start thinking of winding it down, not keeping it ongoing as is, then that's a much different type of analysis and discussion that we don't have with you. I mentioned before, as a mature plan, the cash flows, the contributions in typically going to be less than the benefit payments out, and that's the case. And with the maturing plan too, the duration of the liabilities will continue to decrease. And that's the one thing, one of the things and rationale we used back in 2016 when discussions with you about the amortization period, and that it makes sense to, a couple things. Prior to that, you were using, I believe, an open 30-year amortization period. So every year, the unfunded liability got amortized over 30 years. But the next year, we recalculate the unfunded liability and then amortize that over a future 30-year period. So in effect, you were never buying down that unfunded liability. So we closed that period and further reducing it by 1 year each year. And so results in what we would really consider a very prudent, fairly conservative method of funding the plan. So that gets through the numerical results. I just turn our attention to one or two more pages where we present the participant statistics. This shows the count in the plan at the beginning of the prior year and the reconciliation to where we are at July 1st, 2021. So we have the same total number of participants. We had two active participants who terminated with a vested benefit, and then three active participants and one terminated vested who retired. There were no retiree deaths for the year. That's why we have a consistent number. And then the last page just shows the active participants. Of those 17 active, 13 of them are age 55 or older. So we'll continue to see more and more of the active participants retire. And, even though we do have not very many of them, but we do have, you know, even one participant in the 30 to 34 age band. So that gets us through the report and kind of concludes my comments on that. I welcome questions and discussion.
I want to say thank you, Glenn.
That Spencer or Mike, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I've got a couple comments and a couple questions. Thanks, Braulio. First of all, I think the pension board should be pretty proud of kind of where this is at history of the pension, bringing us up to the funding status that we currently are at, and that's using more conservative methods to calculate the liability. So we've gotten a little more conservative in how we're calculating things, and our funding status has improved, and that's really a pretty solid direction for this plan to be going into. But the question I have, you know, when you look at the on page 23 of the report, you know, we've got one employee in each of the age brackets up to 44, and then everyone else is 50 and over. You know, obviously, this plan has been closed out since the new employees since 2012, and at some point, we're going to only have a handful of employees left in this plan, though we'll be paying benefits out, you know, to the retired employees and their spouses, you know, until the last employee or spouses has passed away. But it kind of, when you're talking about the potential of buying actuaries versus operating our own plan for those retirees, is that something that plans do sometimes?
Yeah, it is. You could kind of think of it almost as a investment decision where you just fully immunize those retirees and transfer the risk from the city and the pension plan to an insurance company. But kind of with the spread of that 6.75% assumed investment return, which in itself does not seem unreasonable, compared to the insurance companies using only something around 2% to price those annuities, you know, there's going to be a big difference in the cost of the annuities compared to the liabilities that we calculate. But as retirees age, or as you get fewer participants in the plan, you know, then the difference between those still might be significant, but it's going to lessen over time. So a lot of plan sponsors are, you know, kind of aware of this, but they're saying that interest rates likely are going to increase over time. We've been saying that for maybe a decade now, but it looks like, you know, compared to where we are, that's likely to happen to some extent. And so the conclusion most reach is now is not a very opportune time to purchase annuities. And so maybe sometime in the future there'll be an opportunity. Other schools of thought is that we've done a good job of managing this plan. It's cheaper to manage it ourselves rather than to pay an insurance company to do that. And we're going to continue, you know, at least for the foreseeable future, to manage it similarly to how we are now, and we'll pay the benefits as they come due. And kind of keep that in the back of our mind if the opportunity would present itself in the future.
Then my thought for the my thought for the pension board is staying with a 10-year amortization, which is the, you know, the highest contribution recommended, which was a $310,000, I think, for the coming year. That'll give a little bit of relief for the city, and it's still a pretty conservative contribution going into the pension program, but that'll be recommendation the trust can make to the city council, whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, we've been making the 10-year plan for the last, or the 10-year amortization for the last 2 years. So, but it'll be
actually, it looks like we were doing more than that based on keeping our contributions level. So
yeah, well, that was last year, the one he's reporting on. Yeah, Yeah, we did 404. I think we did. We stayed off of this for last year, but I'm pretty sure we're on the 2020 plan right now. I don't know. I'll have to look at it.
Are there any other questions or comments of the for the actuarial?
Braulio?
Yes.
I would like to say, Glenn, thank you
very much. I don't have
much.
Any questions. I thought this was...
I have a question, Braulio.
If there's no further... Yeah, Dietmar, go ahead. This is for Glenn.
I'm looking at, just for whoever, I'm looking at the last page of the report. And it says that there's 12 and males and 5 females in the plan right now. How was it that 30-year-olds and let's see, one 30-year-old, one 35-year-old, one 40-year-old person that's in the plan? I thought this was the older plan. How'd they get in that plan?
It is the older plan, but the 2012 is... Anyone employed prior to 2012 was employed in this retirement system. So if you were hired in 2012 as a 22-year-old person, you'd be 31 years old now.
Okay, so
that's the threshold that when we switched over to the plans.
Okay, so so we're going to live with those people for another 30 years,
members. And then as paying a pension to until they or their spouse, whoever is the last survivor, is with us. So,
right.
Like the actuarial said, perhaps when you get down to 2 or 3 participants, it might be beneficial to purchase an insurance policy rather than to maintain our plan.
Yeah, that's good.
But the actuarial did not recommend that at this point in time.
No, we're a couple decades away from that, I suspect. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah. Couple of decades.
Okay.
Are there any more questions for Glenn today? Mr. Heater?
I did have one for Glenn. The assumed investment return rate of 6.75, is that like an actuarial standard or something that you guys have come up with based on kind of the 60-40 mix in asset allocation?
Yeah. Thanks for the question. It's really based on the plan's allocation, reasonable estimate, forward-looking estimate of what the capital markets would assume the return to be. And this rate has been in place since I think 2015 or 16. So it's kind of historically it was probably fairly conservative at the time. And we've seen public pension plans decrease that assumed rate, over time, and particularly in recent years. But many of them were at maybe 8.5%, 8%. And they've been slowly bringing it down to around 7%. So, looking at it on a standalone basis, we feel it's reasonable. Looking at surveying it compared to other governmental pension plans, it's right in line with kind of the mainstream assumption. But we, if we were to discuss this with the plan's investment advisor, we would certainly defer to what their long-term expectations are of this assumption. Now, a lot of times investment advisors would tend to look at something more short-term, like a 10-year projection of expected returns, and we might weight this return based on a shorter-term period, but it's really 20, 30-year assumption. Use reasonable standards of estimation.
Okay.
I have another question. So say that the 30-year-old person is going to retire maybe in another 10 years, and that would be, they would live to be 80 years old. Mm-hmm. the city would then be responsible for paying that. That pension plan that we have invested now is, was paid to cover all that expense for that period of time. That's what I'm understanding now.
Yes.
And the what is the idea about the insurance policy? What is that? How does that play into the mix?
Yeah, I'll explain it, and then Glenn, you can add to it if you need to. But instead of us having a invested funds to meet these future liabilities, and right now this report is saying we're close to 100% funded for those future liabilities based on the set of assumptions that have been outlined here, we would need to continue operating the pension fund until basically the last person that's eligible for funds would be with us. An alternative would be buying an annuity that would equal what their pension would be, and using that to kind of a lump sum payment, in a sense, buying an annuity, and then we could get out of this retirement program. But I think that's really a number of decades away before the city will be in a position.
I won't be around anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I don't think I will be either, Dietmar. So, I think the trust has a lot more work to do. So the trust members, the jobs aren't threatened at all, as far as I can see, in the foreseeable future. So.
Yeah. Thanks for that explanation. Yeah. Thanks.
I have a question.
Oliver, Aurelio, you're breaking up.
Yeah, we can't understand you, Braulio.
Yeah, a lot of people say that's an advantage, but well, I still want to ask the question. On the letter, or the cover page, or back of the cover page, it says in a paragraph, however, future measures may differ significantly from the current measurement because of emerging plan experience, changes in assumptions, or changes to plan provisions of applicable law. Due to the limited scope of this, does not include analysis of potential range of such future measures. I just wonder if there's anything that could be shared that would talk about some of those future things that are there, you know, briefly, I guess. What might that, from our projections and what you said today in your good report, what might be in there that we should know or think about coming down the road?
Okay, that's a great question. Thanks for asking that. And it kind of dovetails with the discussion we had about risk disclosures, where, you know, we're assuming, just to make it for ease of discussion, we're assuming a 6.75% annual return on assets. We could do a projection for you to see where we think that funded status is going to go future years, what we think the required or recommended contribution would be for future years if you did, in fact, earn 6.75% investment return each year. Alternatively, what if you had a zero return on assets? What would be the impact for the funded percentage and the contributions? You know, there would be a significant decrease in the funded percentage over time and an increase in that recommended contribution. So that would be one example where future events would differ from those assumed, and future results could be very different from what we present this year.
Thank you.
Are there any more comments or questions for Glenn or Spencer? Kay, are you still with us?
I have a question for Spencer. Spencer, when you made your comment about the funding at the 10-year amortization at $310,000, is your wish for us to cap that at $310,000 and not exceed that this year?
That's my recommendation based on our funding status, because that's still an aggressive contribution. You know, legitimately, the board could contribute less. That's kind of the highest contribution that's outlined in the report. And so
typically what we've been doing is we've been contributing a fixed amount through the course of the year going forward, and the recommendation, if the trust made this to the council, would be to contribute that for the next 12-month period. I think we start that with the beginning of the fiscal year. Is that right, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, so that would be what we would contribute beginning July 1 of the next fiscal year. So we'll be continuing to contribute at the higher rate through the course of this fiscal year.
How much money does that free up, Spencer?
Well, between what we're contributing now and, you know, it's about 100, just under 100,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Will that keep us at the 97% ratio?
If the plan returns around a 6.75% on assets this year, I would expect that funded ratio to increase a little bit because we have those unrecognized gains to come through the actual value of assets. Yeah.
I think that's it.
Kay, are you still with us today?
Yes.
I think we're kind of drawing to a close of this presentation.
Could you take the share screen down?
Yes, yes, yes.
So when would the next meeting be, Kay?
Kay, did you hear Braulio?
I did. Braulio?
Yes.
Did you hear me? January the 27th.
I can hear you. Okay.
2022.
January 27th.
Yes, 2022.
And at what time? January 22nd, 2022, at 10 o'clock.
Correct.
22nd or 7th.
It's January the 27th in the year of 2022.
Very good. Is there any other business or comments that the Retirement Board of Trustees wishes to consider at this meeting?
Braulio?
We need to make a recommendation.
Yes. Yes, David.
Do we need to make a recommendation to the board?
Would we make those recommendations now or at our next meeting?
Yeah, it'd have to be the next meeting. Is this not? It was not noticed. This was just
okay,
a presentation.
I think that typically we have a discussion mm-hmm. and then we make the recommendation. Mike, when does the fiscal year begin for the city?
Next July 1st. But we'll start. We're
okay,
going to be.
So,
we'll be starting the budget here shortly. So January 27th right. should work.
So I think if we have the discussion on the 27th, we can kind of digest what we've heard today and make our recommendation to the city council.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, yeah. I have an audit committee on that same day too. Is that right?
Oh my goodness.
Same time?
Are we going to have a meeting? Oh boy. We'll have to look into that, Braulio. That's didn't realize that. I'm glad you looked.
I have it down as audit committee for the January 27th at 10 o'clock.
The audit committee is always fluid. It just depends on when we get our financials.
I'm just saying there's a conflict right now.
Yeah, but yeah, I'll have to talk to Linda and I'll talk to Kay after this meeting.
Okay.
Why don't we stay flexible and we'll wait to hear from Kay and the rest of the staff at the at the city.
Yep.
All right. Any other business for us to consider today?
One thing, Braulio. You and I need to sign some paperwork for Barb, so whenever you can come over, it'd be great.
Would today be okay? I have to run to the post office shortly.
Okay.
And I could swing on by my PO.
Sounds good. And I want to say thank you, Glenn. Really
thank you,
appreciate
Michael.
Your time.
Thank you. I appreciate
thanks, Glenn.
It. See you, everybody.
Thank
you,
everybody.
Okay, this meeting, we'll go ahead and we'll adjourn. We'll meet again on January 27th, unless otherwise noticed by the by Kay and the rest of the staff. 10 o'clock on the 27th of January.
Okay.
Bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, thank you.
Happy.
Bye-bye.
You too.